everybody. Welcome to another edition of Sitting Around Talking Movies. We're talking La La Land today. We're also talking about a good movie called Don't Think Twice. What's that about? Stay tuned and find out. Frank and Lola, another movie, and All We Had, which marks the directorial debut of Katie Holmes. I'm joined, as always, by Bill Brigoli.
All We What?
And Bill McCuddy.
I have two microphones.
And I'm Neil Rosen, and let's start talking about La La Land. What's this about? Well, it's an old-fashioned Hollywood musical set in the present, and it's done in the style of, you know, where the characters express their feelings by singing and dancing. You know, those old things, having a conversation, be like, I start singing to you, Bill. It's like, all of a sudden, it's like, well, here's the rest of the plot of
No, not like that. It would be like this. These suddenly those we're saying.
They're professionals that do it in the movie.
That's right. Know. Well, it's set in L.A., and Gosling is a struggling jazz musician playing lousy gigs not worthy of his talent. He's in a cover band. He's playing.
Emma Stone has a great description of jazz music, how it's all in the elevators, and like, they're, and he's a musician.
Play Jingle Bells. He's playing at a restaurant, you know what I mean? He can't deviate.
Just do the set list. And by the way, who tells him to just do the set list?
It's J.K. Simmons. And I'll get to that in a minute. I'll get to it now.
Yeah, explain.
It's directed by Damien Chazelle, who directed Whiplash, which starred J.K. Simmons and
Not Miles my tempo. Teller. Not my tempo.
And
not
obviously, my tempo. Damien Chazelle tempo. Loves jazz because Whiplash was all about jazz, and Ryan Gosling. Not only is he a struggling jazz musician in this, but he extols the virtues to Emma Stone of why jazz is the greatest thing going. So Damien Chazelle obviously has
but
a love
But the better
for jazz.
Inroad for audiences is that Emma Stone is the struggling
Emma
actress.
Emma Stone is an aspiring actress, and she's looking for a big break, and she works in a coffee shop on the Warner Brothers studio lot.
Which is pretty cool in and of itself because it's got all these famous people walking by and coming in.
Walks across the street from the only surviving set from the movie Casablanca.
Which I don't think is true.
No, that is the only surviving set. I don't know if
but
it's
But did they
there,
shoot it there? Or
well,
is
the
it
only
that?
Thing that remains from the movie Casablanca, I know this, is if you're familiar with the movie, when they go to Paris, when Rick and Ilsa go to Paris, they have a bite in an outdoor cafe. And
well, I know the piano survives because they've auctioned it off about three times and it's gotten up to like $500,000.
Well, that fake facade of the European cafe is the only remaining, other than the soundstage where they filmed it on, in terms of an outdoor set. So whether or not it's across the street from the studio lot, maybe not.
Of all the two-bit gin joints in the world, I had to walk into this place.
But anyway, so they meet Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling.
That was my Ryan Gosling
They
impression.
Fall in love, and we watch their relationship unfold against the backdrop of Hollywood. Which is filmed beautifully. In
so
this,
we have a chance to talk with Emma Stone, which is very
That's
exciting.
That's right. Emma Stone talked about being in a musical.
A lovely night. It takes place in Griffith Park, and it is probably most memorable to Ryan and I is the scene we did in just one take, and we rehearsed for months. It's this really, really great scene into song, into big dance number on the hill in Griffith Park where our characters really connect in a real way for the first time.
To me, the real reason Emma Stone's performance works, and she is being touted now as the leader, which means she won't win because the leader usually stumbles, for Best Actress at the Academy Awards. To me, the reason her performance works is because of the incredible comedic timing of Ryan Gosling. He is absolutely, you complete me from Jerry Maguire, he completes her.
I don't find him that funny at all.
Oh, he's got all the greatest. When he and his sister, when his sister comes into her apartment and says, here, this is a great rug for you. I think Miles Davis peed on it or something. Like, he's like, really? Because like everything in his apartment is like Hoagy Carmichael sat on this stool and blah, 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 blah.
Did you find it? Brigoli particularly funny.
I think he's. How about the scene where
he's
she
deadpan.
Showed,
he's deadpan.
Yes, he throws the jokes away. I was laughing out loud at this movie. Brigoli was at the same screening.
That's
here's
right.
Here's what I liked about the movie, and here's what I didn't like about the movie. First of all, the production numbers, and they are. There's an opening production number in this where everybody's stuck in bumper-to-bumper traffic on an L.A. freeway, which they had to close down for 2 days, apparently. Filming.
Almost nothing happens in a studio. I just want to make that point also. Well, the songs organically happen on the streets.
When you look at the history of Hollywood musicals, which were filmed on sound stages in Hollywood, most of these musicals did not really utilize L.A. and Hollywood. This movie really, I mean, they go to the Griffith.
This is like West Side Story, which was shot around Manhattan.
Yeah, they go to the Griffith Observatory, uh-huh. Which is right above the Hollywood sign, if you're familiar with that. And there's all these cool, they really make Hollywood look beautiful, And if you look at the old classic musicals, they don't And they sent us a lovely book, actually.
Talk about expensive. A coffee table book. You could put four legs on just the
book. Yeah, that could be a coffee table.
I couldn't even pick the thing up. It weighed like 50 pounds.
Yeah, well, you're very weak.
Well, I am weak. But, you know, so they utilize Hollywood beautifully. Here's the thing. I was the musical numbers are great.
Speaking of weak, here comes his argument about why La La Land isn't any good.
No, I think it's very good. I think that I wasn't thrilled with Ryan Gosling or Emma Stone's voice. I'll tell you that. I don't think they were really.
She only sang in full voice once.
You know, I think they dance very well. I think they have great chemistry, which was demonstrated in Crazy Stupid Love. They were together in that movie first. I was not drawn into the plot. I was kind of bored with the story until. Which I can't give away, the final scene, which justifies everything that came before it. And that final scene, which again, I can't
So if a scene justifies everything that came before it,
well, I was
kind of
bored for like an hour in the movie.
Yeah, come on.
Story-wise, until you got to the next musical number. But I'll tell you that ending is such genius that it moved me, it touched me, and it makes the whole
thing. All right, let me bring up one of your boring scenes. She goes to a party, a Hollywood party, and a lot of the movie takes place and all these people are trying to meet
where
people and network.
He's playing a cover band.
He's in an 80s cover band.
Right.
What does she order? She asks for, they take requests and she asks for Iran. And he's like, I'm not playing that. But he's not the band leader. There's another little kid who's the band leader. And he goes, of course, let's do Iran. So Ryan Gosling,
right. By the way, Bill is not talking about the country. Iran.
No, there's a. There's
he's
a,
talking the, about the song called Iran.
So Iran is like the last thing that this serious musician wants to play. So he's nodding to the band leader, this kid he's working for, and he's giving all these dirty looks to Emma Stone, and she's loving it. You didn't think that was funny? You didn't laugh out loud at that?
No, I didn't laugh out loud at that. I thought it was an okay scene. You know, to me, the movie, not only just the final.
Did you watch this at
not
home?
Only the final, no. Not only, I saw it at a Film Society of Lincoln Center on a very big screen.
And it didn't play well in the room?
No, it played very well. I liked the movie. I'm saying even other than the last sequence, which I thought was genius, even, and I can't describe what happens leading up to that last scene. Let's just say that there's a scene where Ryan Gosling goes to Emma Stone's house, and let's leave it at that, finds out where her parents live or something. And, I mean, yeah, I think that the last 20 minutes or so of this movie, it really comes together. But there's some lulls in La La Land along the way, you know?
I tend to agree, as far as lulls are concerned. For me, if it had been 20 minutes shorter, it would have been perfect.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that stuff of, like, you know, them living together and kind of arguing, and I don't know, you know, it was just not, it wasn't
I thought it was amazing. I thought it was great, and I think this is a good time
for
a more reasonable voice to chime in here.
I'm not panning the movie. I like the movie.
Let's listen, thank God he's not here, to walk out of the room listening to you, Neil Rosen. Let's hear from Ryan Gosling.
It's still beautiful every time I hear it. I mean, I practiced some of those piano pieces 4 hours a day for 3 months. I mean, I should technically never want to hear them again. But every time I hear them, I'm still moved by them. I mean, it's really, really beautiful music.
Admit that he has great comic timing, that he is a great comedic actor.
Oh, yes, but not in I don't
look at him at the look at him
I
at
think
the
he's a great comedic actor in Crazy
Golden
Stupid
Globes
Love.
And all of those things that he shows up and does like really, really funny bits at.
I think he's funny in Crazy Stupid Love. I think that's very funny. I think she's very funny in that movie when she goes, seriously, were you Photoshop when he takes his shirt off?
Yeah.
Like, he's very funny. But in this movie, no, I don't see this as a comedic thing at
the
all.
The Nice Guys and or The Good Guys or what the fuck that thing was called?
I hated that movie.
But he was funny in it.
I don't know. You thought he was funny in it?
He was funnier than Russell Crowe.
Well, you know, I don't think they sing great. I think they dance well. They're no Fred and Ginger, but, you know, I like the movie. I'm telling you things I didn't like about the movie, but overall I would recommend the movie.
Good. So is it in your top 10 list? Is La La Land in your top 10?
I haven't constructed that list yet. It's a viable candidate. Let's put it to you that way.
Well, Hollywood and I can all breathe easy.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, they used to make Hollywood musicals like the way they make superhero movies now. You know, every studio, with MGM being the cream of the crop, but every studio had their unit that made music, and they would churn out these musicals, from the Shirley Temple musicals to the Nelson. You know, Jeanette McDonald and Nelson, anyone. I'm calling you. You know, like, you know, I mean, the Busby Berkeley stuff, the Fred and Ginger stuff. I mean, there's tons and tons of musicals. And, you know, they just, I don't know, can audiences really, I mean, on TV they're doing it. They're having like
people
Hairspray Live and The Sound of Music Live.
And Glee. And look at things like Glee.
And my crazy
Ex-Girlfriend. Yeah.
Yeah, but in the movies they're not, you know, when you see a musical
it's
in a
tough
movie,
sell. I think
it's like a Jersey Boys.
Okay, but let's jump in with answers here to this 22-minute Charlie Rose
Sing
question. It's basically that we only have we can only take a couple a year. We can only do a couple a year.
Why?
That's it. I mean, as audiences, I'm saying
hundreds
it's like
of them a year. Hundreds.
Well, that's because they made
more.
They made everything. Yeah. You're talking about a time in Hollywood where they made anything that was on the Broadway stage because it was proven in the Broadway stage, and there were a lot more musicals. Although there's still tons of musicals on the Broadway stage now, but they got
and they're all former movies.
They got to right now. They're going backwards. Young Frankenstein and all these things that used to be films are becoming musicals. But it's a bench test. It's like they can go, well, it did really well there, and we've got the songs already. Let's go make a movie. There are a lot
Let's
more
put on a show.
There's
Judy,
a lot. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot more interesting things that filmmakers are doing besides musicals. But that said, there's a great little musical that with Anna Kendricks that nobody saw called The Last 5 Years.
Well, we all saw that
Richard LeGravenaise. No, I'm saying to people listening to this, that Richard LeGravenaise did, which I think is just as good as La La Land, that nobody went to see, and I think it's currently on demand.
I'm not thrilled with that movie. But that you just mentioned. Listen, I like the musical sequence number in 500 Days of Summer when all of a sudden, you know.
Yeah, but that's a sequence. Again, you're saying, and it goes back to my argument about less, you know, people want less musicals as a movie-going public.
Chicago, the movie Chicago, was my favorite movie of the year that movie came out, okay? And that also, the characters just burst out into song.
But that wasn't a giant moneymaker. The Oscar push helped it a little to cross, I think, $100 million, but it wasn't a giant.
What I want to try to understand is why do these movie musicals, where not like a Sing Street, where like the musical numbers are the band performing.
Great right? film, by the way, I want to say.
It is a great film. Or Jersey Boys, which was not a great film, but again, it's like, well, let's record, you know, Sherry Baby or something, and then they do their
right.
song. Or,
yeah, what do they call them? Jukebox.
That's musicals. A movie with music as opposed to a real musical.
They have musical numbers, you know. They have musical numbers. You know, why are these things so successful on television lately and on Broadway? But, you know, do movie audiences, I mean, apparently there was a big appetite for this in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, and that desire just kind of went away, you know? What do you think, Bergoglio? That's a hell of a question.
Yeah, that's right.
Speak to us, Yoda.
We became a bit more jaded, I think. It is strange when all of a sudden somebody sings. You know, it was weird right then, wasn't it?
One of everybody's favorite movies.
Yes.
I mean, they all just, you know, all of a sudden the Cowardly Lion.
The
Scarecrow, if I only had a brain, you know.
In the beginning of La La Land, I think that first number where they're all stuck in traffic, it takes the audience, you can almost hear gears changing in the audience.
They're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, what
right.
is this? You know, it's an odd moment. And once you get used to it, then it's fine. But
that's what a filmmaker wants to do, though. They want to set a tone at the very beginning.
I agree with that. If you, I always say if you establish a, you know.
One of the best openings this year to establish an odd tone of a horrible movie where you thought, oh, my God, this is going to be different than anything else.
The Lobster.
Well, The Lobster, did you see that got nominated for screenplay by the...
The first half's great, and then it falls apart.
No, it's Nocturnal Animals.
I have not seen Nocturnal
Animals. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you saw
it. No, I have not seen
it. Anyone who's seen it knows it has an amazing opening, and you go, oh, my God, this is odd, cool. This is a real filmmaker, and then it sort of falls apart. We'll talk about that, I guess, when it...
I don't know. All I'm saying is that, like, if you look at a movie like Sid and Nancy, for example, okay... And they're playing Sex Pistols. So, the music is not, they're not like bursting into song. It's like, I got to go on stage and play something. You know what I mean? Like, so that's what.
The reason you can hear me better than Neil is that Neil is not talking on his microphone. He needs to talk on his microphone.
Let's move on. Okay, so.
What else you got?
I love this movie called Don't Think. I love this movie called Don't Think Twice.
Oh, good.
And it's, why don't you describe it, Bill?
Want
me to describe it? I'll describe
Mike Birbiglia, who is a stand-up comic himself, has worked a long time around New York and around the country, very popular, did a movie called Sleepwalk With Me, where he went on the road and sort of tested these ideas, has done the same thing. This is about probably an improv group he was in at one point or knows the world of,
And I need a place. I need a situation. I need a...
give me a Shakespeare play and a musical number. So this is about stand-up improv comedy. And very much like the Upright Citizens Brigade, has a bunch of people who want to then go on to perhaps something else. And the something else in this case is a show so much like... Saturday Night Live, that it has a quirky Lauren Michaels turn by a guy.
Buys
him a wooden bicycle, which will make no sense listening to this, but when you see the movie, you'll go, oh yeah, that's a quirky thing.
Well, everybody's scared of this Lauren Michaels character.
Right, and there is
and
that.
They're all like shaking in their shoes, you know.
So predictably, one of the producers of this thing called Weekend Live, I think, comes to the Upright Citizens Brigade like... little show, and lo and behold, two people get the nod for an audition, and that's when everything goes to hell, because you made a really good point on the show today.
My point is that being around the comedy world, I spend time in comedy clubs, and Bill McCuddy being, you know, doing stand-up comedy on the side, it's so accurate that when somebody from this group makes it, and in this case, it's Keegan-Michael Key of Key and Peele.
Right.
The group is like feigning excitement of like, this is so great.
For you.
You're on set. It's called Weekend Live, but it's really like Saturday Night Live. This is great, but they're seething with jealousy.
Sure.
It should have been me. He took that. I wrote that skit. And it's just.
There's
so
a great old line about
the
difference between musicians and comedians is musicians need one another. And the truth on this movie is that these comics need one another, and they're very. In terms of their stand-up, of the improv, they do sort of watch each other's back. They have a thing before the show where they touch each other's back, and I've got your back. And that's very true about improvisational comedy. But stand-up per se itself is very cutthroat.
But it's really Mike Birbiglia who wrote this stars in this and directed this. And I wasn't that thrilled with Sleepwalk With Me. This is so much better. This is what a...
It is. I mean, more people will like this.
And this is a great film. I mean, he also looks at the fact that this character played by Key of Key and Peele, like, he knows, like you said, Bill, like, there's these Saturday Night Live people in the audience. Right. And he just...
And they tell him before they go out, don't showboat, don't make it about you.
So they have a whole construct of what to do in the improv scene, but this guy completely not... anything to do with the scene, decides to do, was it an Obama impression?
Yeah, he walks to the front of the stage
and starts doing, on
the thinnest of premises for the scene, starts going into Obama.
Right, I'm going to tell you that Michelle and I, we've been here for many years, you know, in the White House for several. Right,
although his is really good.
It doesn't work with the scene at all, but it was just a showcase for him to do his Obama. And they even give him shit afterwards. And they're like, you had to work that Obama.
Well, actually, to his credit, it does kind of work in the scene. But it's not anywhere where the scene was supposed to go.
And what's also interesting, there's so many moments in this that are great. It's like when he makes it on this Saturday Night Live show and they're all pissed off. And he comes back to the comedy troupe called the Commune. Well, everybody in the audience, they're just shouting his name. Yeah, they don't want to hear anything.
Yeah, do.
Right. And then
it'd be like Dana Carvey showing up, everybody yelling, do church lady,
lady. And all of a sudden he just like, you know, just says screw it. And he goes up and he starts doing his characters from the show. Like, who wants movie tickets? Who wants it? Like one of his famous characters. So there's just so many interesting things in this. And Birbiglia is living in a commune. He's living like in a college dorm on the top of a bunk bed.
He brings a girl home.
He goes, I don't want to have sex with you in your college dorm, you know? And the other interesting thing about this is Birbiglia's character, and I know people like this, is like he's been doing this for like 17 years, the character, and he hasn't made it. And but
he's actually the teacher of this group.
Right.
So they're
right.
Like, he at one point he goes, I taught you everything you know. And he says it so sincerely. It sounds like a cliche, but he really did teach all of these people everything they know. And they are sort of eclipsing him. And he's really good actor.
Right. But
he's really good, but
what's interesting about it is that, and there are so many comics that are working for 20, 30 years and they don't even, you know, consider the fact that they're not going to get, they're just waiting for their break. They don't consider the fact that it's not going to happen for them. And I don't want to tell you what happens in this movie, but it's obviously not, if it hasn't happened in 17 years.
We know lots of guys like that.
It's not going to happen for you.
Right.
And nobody's telling this guy this. And, you know, he probably is more talented than a lot of these people. But for whatever reason, he's getting too old now. His break, you know, right. because I was this close to getting it, yeah. you know, like I was this close, you know, to getting SNL or yeah. Weekend Live. Yeah. yeah. And it, again, knowing the world and you know the world, it's so on the money. It's a great film. This is a movie that I think might crop up on my 10 best list. You were asking about my 10
uh-huh.
best list. Yeah. I love the film. All right. So Katie Holmes, who would have figured Katie Holmes makes a directorial debut. She has a movie coming out called All We Had. And, you know, just on paper, Katie Holmes in her directorial debut just sounds awful. And lo and behold, it's not awful. This woman knows what she's doing for a directorial debut. Is it a great movie? No, but it's a good movie. And I think, you know, it's a good first directorial effort. And it's on demand as well as in theaters. And I think it's a good on-demand rental. She plays a mother with her teenage daughter. I guess, how old's the kid?
She's 15 because she can drive.
Right.
She has a permit to drive.
And, you know, they're destitute. The movie opens. They're leaving some guy that Katie Holmes has been hooking up with right. some apartment.
They take a TV as a lovely parting gift.
Yeah. And, you know, your car breaks down. They run out of gas. They order a big meal in a diner, and they skip the check, but then the car breaks down, and they're stuck there. She goes in and apologizes, and then Richard Kind, who's the owner of the diner, says, listen, you know, why don't I, you know, you broke.
It looks like James Gandolfini with a rug.
Why don't I teach you how to be a waitress? And, you know, and she's so kind, Richard Kind, to the daughter. Like, she's like, I've never seen anybody wash dishes like this before. You're the best dishwasher.
She's dropping the dishes. Nobody's doing a very good job. You didn't mention that Katie Holmes has a drinking not problem, but she drinks. She whores around a lot. Kelly Ripa's husband is in it, Mark Consuela, as kind of a sleazy real estate.
Judy Greer shows up for about
5 seconds.
Judy Greer's
in it for like 5 seconds.
Luke Wilson's in it. He plays an alcoholic who
is on the mend and meets her at an AA meeting. And you know, listen, as we're describing it, it's got every cliche box you could possibly check. But I agree with you. This is a really well-made first little movie.
Yeah, there's nothing
she's got a couple of times where she makes some kind of really interesting directorial choices in the camera placement, in the story, and how it evolves. And I give it a lot of leeway in terms of a number of potential kinds of cliches it could do. And it does most of them, but I still think it's good, and I recommend it.
Yes, it doesn't reinvent the wheel. You've seen a lot of this before, but it doesn't really matter.
The girl looks just like her. I mean, the girl looks enough like her. The casting is amazing. Someone on the show today called it the Gilmore Girls gone wrong or get drunk or whatever. It kind of is that. And if you like Gilmore Girls, and God, that's having a huge resurgence right now with Netflix, then check this out. I think you'll like it.
It's a decent first directorial effort. And, you know, there's a lot of, like you said, a lot of little scenes here that are just really watchable and good. I like the movie, and it's a nice little indie film that as I said, I'm repeating myself, but it's worth checking out on demand. I mean, I think you'll like it.
Now, who's the hardest working man in show business right now? Who has 8 movies out this year?
James Franco.
No, Michael Shannon.
Oh, Michael Shannon.
Michael Shannon, it was pointed out to us on the show, and by the way, we say it every week, but this is the after show to a television program we make every week on New York One locally and Time Warner, now Spectrum nationally.
Called Talking Pictures.
Talking Pictures. Please watch that.
And,
our very lives
depend on
it.
And what do we do here on the after show, Bill?
Well, we sort of bullshit and kind of like call each other out and make light jokes. And also, we watch the bad movies so you don't
have
to.
That's right. We do.
And this could have been a bad movie. The Michael Shannon movie is
called Frank and Lola.
Frank and Lola. Imogene Poots is in it, who looks so much like Scarlett Johansson in this movie at some points that it sort of is breathtaking. But it's set in Las Vegas. These two are kind of in love right from the get-go. We see they're having sex or trying to.
There's an interesting scene about that beginning when they're about to have sex and he's on top of her.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, maybe we should wait.
Yeah.
And she goes, wait? And he goes, yeah, I think it'd be more special.
Right, and
like
from that moment,
they get tattoos
just met.
Of each other's names.
Yes, they do. Well, she gets one of his name. I'm not sure.
He does.
Yeah, this is really almost like Fatal Attraction in terms of a guy, but with the guy falling for the girl, and done much more subtly. Actually, they're good time people. He's a very good chef. Justin Long comes along as a snotty kind of business owner that can help him,
and he's worried that Justin Law
is trying to stop her, and he's worried about everybody.
He's very jealous, and she cheats on him, And then she cut. This is, I'm not ruining the movie. And she comes up with a story of why she cheated with him, on him,
which we shouldn't tell.
Okay, fine.
I don't think.
All right, then I won't say it.
But then we can say.
But he says a great line until when he finds out that he cheated on her. He goes, "Up until a moment ago, I would have walked through glass for you." Yeah. That's a great line because you know the depth of his love is so much, and the depth of his jealousy. He tries to track down the guy that she was with that cheated on
him. An old boyfriend or an old acquaintance
played
of
by
hers.
Michael Nyquist.
Which takes the movie to Paris in a totally unexpected turn that you're like, boy, this movie has a lot of good surprises. And even if at the end of it you go, I don't know about this movie, Michael Shannon once again gives a great performance.
Well, I have to say, and I said on the TV show today, that I think Michael Shannon is probably the most captivating actor working today. I mean,
he's the best thing in the otherwise lousy right. Nocturnal Animals, right. I just want to mention.
Whether he's playing Elvis, literally, or the sleazy guy in 99 Homes,
right.
Or, anytime this guy...
Hitman, Iceman, or whatever that
right,
was called.
Even in Loving, you know, which we've discussed that on the show in the past, which I thought was flat in a lot of spots, he comes on as the Life magazine photographer, and he just, like, brightens the whole thing up for
yeah, them. He's, like...
He's remember, incredible, and
remember
he's not
Jeff,
that good-looking of a guy.
Remember how Jeff Goldblum would walk into a movie like The Big Chill or something, and you'd go, oh, that guy just takes you to a new place all of a sudden, because he's just interesting to look at, and he's a good actor.
Well, he's
I
not
think
that
Shannon
good-looking
is,
of a guy for to be a leading man, but yet
he looks like David
movie,
Letterman's beat-up cousin from like the
yeah, that's
but
a real weary face.
But they give him, but somehow he's able to pull off the sexy good. She even goes to the beginning, like, "You're a cool guy." You know, he's a chef, and so I think that
he used to work in an ice cream store in Wilmette, Illinois, called Homer's, and I used to go to that store as a child, and so did
really?
Bill Murray. So we all share that. Sort of
well,
rocky
I don't
road
know. This, this writer, you know, Matthew Ross, who's making his feature film directorial debut here, you know, twists the story in several
Another
places.
Very accomplished debut.
It's yeah, and it's you know, it is. It takes some of it, as you said, takes place in Paris, and I think this movie almost could have been like a foreign film. If this was in subtitles, you could see the whole pacing is like a European vibe to the whole thing, you know? Mm. So anyway, Bill, we haven't, you know.
Just as a quick sidebar, have you both seen Elle? Speaking of foreign films, okay, we got to talk about that because Isabelle Huppert is getting all kinds of amazing traction out of this.
There's another twisted one
this
in
is
our
Paul
screener pile I want you guys to check out, too.
So let's talk about the screener pile, Bertoli.
No, wait.
There's a twisted one in our screening pile. It's a Korean film called The Handmaiden, which you should definitely
That's winning some production design awards. Is it beautiful to look at?
It's beautiful to look at, and it's got Korean lesbians. But it's got a twist upon a twist upon a twist. It is really worth checking out.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're – okay.
What's the film, Bregoli, that also came in our screener pile directed by Paul Verhoeven?
That's Elle. That's what
Elle.
I was just talking about.
Oh, that is
about.
Elle. And you like Elle.
I don't want to give too much away. She's great, and it's twisted, and you brought up the fact that this movie that we're talking about, Frank and Lola, could be a foreign film. You'll see why there's
a
lot of...
They wanted to make it in America, and they just couldn't find anyone to do it.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I mean, movie is very French. Very French.
It's very French.
After breakups, the women... I don't want to give too much away, but everybody in France seems to not care who's sleeping with who, which is exactly the side story for Frank and Lola. He gets over to France... Well, anyway, I don't want to give too much away, but like the French think about things very differently.
Bill Bregoli, what have you seen in the last week with this big batch of screeners that have been sent to us because we're all part of the BFCA when we have the Critics' Choice Awards coming up soon? What have you seen that you've either liked or hated in this batch of screeners other than the Korean lesbian movie?
Yeah, Handmaid Tale.
Yeah, The Handmaid. The Handmaiden. Yeah.
Handmaiden.
That's
Handmaiden.
The one you'd recommend.
That I really do worth checking out. I've been looking at stuff that I didn't have time to see.
Have you seen Hidden Figures?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, what do you think of that? I saw that too.
It's a good time movie. It's nice, and that's it.
It's
is about some African American women who worked at NASA in the 60s.
They were math brilliant. Well, why don't you tell them what it is?
Yeah, one of them's a brilliant mathematician, the other one figures out how to run the computer system that they bought and didn't know what to do with.
The IBM.
The IBM. And it's a mainframe, too. And
takes up like a... Like,
what's
like
the third one? There was
well, it's Octavia Spencer.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, okay.
And it's...
All the figures are hidden to me.
That's
I have no
well,
idea
it's a great pun.
It's a feel-good film, but that's about it.
I like the title.
Racism 101. She's... There's a woman who's really trying to work hard. She's killing herself, knocking out figures. She's doing so much incredible math.
And she's not getting credit.
And she goes missing for 40 minutes
every day.
Every day, because she has to use the colored bathroom.
That's the big Oscar scene.
So let me guess. When
she screams in the middle of the thing.
Let me just guess. There's a noble white guy who thinks this is all wrong.
As in Kevin Costner.
Okay.
Well, there's a scene. The scene that Bill is talking about, where Kevin Costner goes, "Where do you go every day for four?" Like, in other words, they're trying to beat the Russians. This is a big.
And do we, as an audience, know where she's going, or it's a reveal?
Yes. Okay. There's a big sub. You know, they keep showing you clips of Yuri Gagarin, the first astronaut in space, and Sputnik, and all these things, and we're losing. And Kevin Costner's, "Call your wives. We're going to be working, burning the midnight oil." And she just keeps disappearing for 40 minutes because the colored bathroom, as they call it in this thing, is on the other side of the NASA campus. And so he starts yelling at her and going, "You know, where are you doing 40 minutes every day?" She goes, "I'm going to the bathroom."
And does she
40 minutes in the bathroom? She goes, "No, I'm spending 2 minutes in the bathroom. I'm spending 15 minutes walking to the bathroom and 15 minutes because it's on the other side of the, you know, it's like a half a mile away in each direction to relieve myself." And another thing, why do you have a small coffee pot for me? Why can't I use the same coffee pot that everybody else is using in this damn thing?
Yeah. Right? Can I tell you the one decent Arsenio Hall joke in his whole career? Why there are no black astronauts?
Why?
Because they don't want to say yes, NASA, no, NASA.
Oh, God.
The one funny joke.
All right. Captain Fantastic, I didn't get a chance to see. And I saw
that's quite good.
That's really worth checking out.
Yeah, that is good.
And I got another one.
They don't celebrate Christmas. They do Noam Chomsky Day.
No, Chomsky.
Yeah, I know. And there was one, I don't know if you guys got it. I got it because someone wanted me to consider an actress in the movie, and I frankly forget the actress's name, but the movie's called The Bronze, and it's about an Olympic athlete who gets a bronze medal. There is one of the funniest sex scenes you'll ever see.
That's been on demand for a long time, and in fact, I thought we should do that.
We should do that on
the show.
You might have it somewhere. I was sent it, but I don't think I was sent it as a...
No, I don't think that's part of our year-end thing.
Before we go, the Critics' Choice nominations were announced this week, and we all voted for them. What do you think of what they came up with?
Let's give it a plug. That show is this Sunday night on A&E, correct?
It's this Sunday night.
I got a press release for it, and it mentioned that it's Sunday night, and it didn't mention what network. Really well done.
Very nice. And they get this
note to Joey Berlin,
who's now also a producer.
T.J. Miller, right, he's also in.
Office Party.
How is Office Christmas Party?
He's in Silicon Valley. Is he any good in that? Yeah. Has anyone seen that show? That. All right.
So what's the deal with
deal
with these nominations? Are you happy with them? Do you think they're going to reflect the Oscar nominations? Do you think they're a little too mainstream? What's your take?
We have a lot of categories now.
A lot of nominations.
Best
some of these
action,
categories.
Best supporting actress in an action movie that was made for television.
Right.
Yeah.
Come on. Somebody actually tweeted that out. They showed our four best actresses in an action movie, and they said, "You think the Oscars are strange? One prominent film group did this." Look, I'll defend us in this way. We are what now? Three? I say us because Neil, we're in the BFCA. We have like 300 members as opposed to the Golden Globes, which we are now trumping by having a show, you know, a couple weeks
before. What do they
have,
12 members?
They have 90-something of – I think there are much – I think the Broadcast Film Critics Association – and again, I'm a member, so maybe throw me out – is a much more credible organization of working journalists than the Golden Globes. We've talked ad nauseum about the Golden Globe organization, how you can write for the Czechoslovakian penny saver and you're considered a film critic.
And you get to have your picture taken with whatever star
I have junket. A Latvian newsletter that is read by...
But meanwhile, why aren't we flown around the world and and wined and dined on
our TV program doesn't make as much money as
that. Our TV program is not on NBC.
But I think I think we make good choices and I think the show can be good. We'll see. It had an elaborate opening with T.J. Miller last year, like the Oscars, that I thought was funny in some places and not in others. But that aside, and the other thing I should say is, like the Golden Globes, we recognize television. So it's a lot. It's a lot of awards.
So Bregoli, what was your one big nomination that you were happy to see got nominated in this Critics' Choice batch, or that did not get nominated and you were disappointed?
No, I was happy that The modern Western, we're calling it.
Hell or High Water?
Hell or High Water. Yeah. I was happy about that.
I was happy that Sally Field, although not in Best Actress for Hello, My Name is Doris, got Best Comedic Actress. See, that's how many categories there are.
And the newcomer, we have a newcomer kid category, which recognizes the young boy in Lion.
Sonny
Gadoo!
I've been waiting all show to do that. Sonny Powell.
You've seen that.
Yes, I have seen that.
What do you think of Lion?
It's a nice feel-good movie. I liked it when it was in India more than I liked it when he was.
Okay,
when
we'll
he got
talk
to
about.
Well,
we weren't right, playing. We'll talk about Lion. Okay, so Bill, tell everybody since you didn't see a couple of the movies that we talked. Tell everybody what Lion.
Yeah, give us the rundown.
All right, there are two Indian boys. Mom has a nice job picking up rocks for a living.
In India somewhere.
In India, the older brother, and I mean older, like he's maybe 10 as opposed to the other one's 11, says, I've got a night job. The little one says, bring me along. I want to. Well,
and the night job is?
Picking stuff up.
Yeah, right.
This is like Fred Flintstone of work.
Come on. It's much better than these guys are making it sound.
I love the movie. I want Bill to get his set up.
I'm trying to make it fun.
Go on.
And
you are.
They get split up. And the little one's looking for his older brother forever. He falls asleep on a train and winds up 1,000 miles away in Calcutta.
That's correct. And they don't speak the language even.
Right. He speaks Hindi. They speak something else. It's really confusing for him and for them, except for the people who want to get him adopted.
He knows one word. Gadoo!
No, he knows. And also, they ask him where he's from, and he doesn't know. They say, what's the name of your mother? He goes, Mum. Yeah. And what is
it's the name in the village? And even he even says that wrong.
Well, he's 5 years old.
Yeah.
And then he's almost sold into prostitution. He's like living on the streets for a couple of months.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then some kind-hearted woman, you know, like
the Kris Jenner of India.
Come in. Here's some food.
Who's used to prostituting children.
Here's an orange soda for you, you know. And then you're going, oh, finally, it's gonna be okay. And then all of a sudden, some guy walks in and starts taking the kid's clothes off. Because this is perfect. He's gonna be perfect.
Lie down next to me.
He escapes from that. I mean, it's this Dickensian house of horrors. He winds up in an orphanage that's awful, you know. And then he gets adopted by Nicole Kidman.
See,
and
she's really good in this, and proves that she plays an Australian woman.
They live in Tasmania, and Australia.
So she's in her wheelhouse, but she's really good.
Right, and then it fast forwards.
The boy turns into Dev Patel.
Dev Patel 20 years later, and it opens up 20 years later.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't like Dev Patel as an actor. I've been getting all kinds of pushback on him.
He's wearing a wetsuit, and he's like, he's living the lap of luxury.
All right, we're not going to go moment by moment in
a movie. No, but then he tries to search for, he's haunted by his past and remembers when he was five.
He's not haunted for a while when he's stupping Rooney Mara.
Yeah.
No, but all of a sudden he sees this little dessert. Jellies or whatever they're called.
He is a little boy.
And it all comes back, the aroma of it all comes back to him, and he goes on a quest to
thank God for Google Maps, which, you know, this story told like 30 years ago would never happen.
Right.
With AAA triptychs, he'd never
find Google Earth, he tries to see if he could find where he got lost many years ago. I agree with Bill Bregoli. I think the first half, when he's a five-year-old kid in India, is better. I think that Sonny Pawar, who plays the kid, deserves an Oscar, maybe certainly an Oscar nomination.
Don't forget Robert Wall, who I know is listening, his rule about Oscars.
Yes. Yeah, we don't give it to first. It's a
never
lifetime
give it
achievement.
To kids. Never give it to kids.
Right.
No children.
So, you know, but I do like the second part. I guess it gets slow at a little parts when he's just depressingly walking around trying to, you know, figure out his life.
But it's beautifully edited and shot.
I love
and
the movie.
That might be my number one movie of the year.
You've watched it twice already.
I will say to you that the last 5 minutes of the movie are probably one of the best sequences for a true story, because often they tell the true story and there's the obligatory, you know, here's what really happened at the end in Cairo, type on the screen. And if this doesn't move you to tears, this last 5 minutes,
my wife and I
watched it last night. My daughter and I are going to watch it again tonight, so it'll be my third time with this movie. I got no problem. This is one of those movies that I like watching other people's reaction to. Whiplash was that movie for me 2 years ago. I would watch it with people.
Lion is on my 10 best list. I can guarantee you that. I love the movie. I could understand Bregoli's point that, you know, the first part is better than the second, but I still think it's a terrific movie.
Ironically, you know who hates this movie?
Who?
Jeffrey Lyons.
Why?
No, I'm kidding.
No, he loves it.
It's called Lion.
Some assembly required, apparently, on some of these jokes. Yeah. All right,
so next week we're going to be doing What are we doing next week?
Well, it's the year end. I mean, we got so many great.
No.
I mean, it's getting towards the end of the year, and so we're seeing more and more great movies.
Going to see, we're going Rogue One.
Star Wars, Rogue One.
Nothing but Star Wars.
Right. We're going to do Star Wars next week. So you don't want to miss that.
And we're going to talk about women in film, strong women in film, because that's the headline apparently from this.
We talk about Aaron Brockovich.
No, but we're going to talk about Lara Croft.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Who gets the children? Lara Croft or the guy from Allied?
We're going to talk about Supergirl. She's a strong woman.
Before we leave, yes. Did you get Arrival or did you not get Arrival?
Got Arrival.
And did you like
it? And watch
it. Did you understand it or not understand it?
Oh, did I get it? Get it.
Yeah. Did you get Arrival?
Did you get the screener of Arrival?
Yeah,
no,
I got
no.
It. I got
he
it.
He
I
understands
got the screener,
that part of the question.
I got the, and I,
well, I haven't seen it
and
yet,
I actually
so let's not
pretty
talk about
much
it.
Got, but I think you described it, and I've used your term as a head scratcher, and I think for a lot of people it is.
Well, I'm scratching my head right now, and we want to thank you. Remember Star Wars next week for Bill Bregoli.
I'm scratching something else.
Bill McCuddy and me, Neil Rosen. Thanks for sitting around talking movies, and we'll sit around next week talking movies, Star Wars in particular, with you again.